This is Tino Magneta, and welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Today, we're going to continue our Wonder Woman of Gaming series with an amazing and incredible person and a really good friend of mine, Carrie Smith. Carrie, how are you today?
I am doing very well, Tino. It's a pleasure to be here, and happy to be speaking to you from sunny Palm Springs, where it's currently 93 degrees.
Wow, that's amazing. That's cool. And it gets hotter too, right?
Oh, it gets much hotter. We're just warming up for the summer months.
Like Vegas, right?
Very much like Vegas. Very similar temperatures.
Yeah. So, Carrie, you know, we've known each other for a while. We've hung out, and you know, you're one of those people that has been an inspiration to so many women. You know, your reputation precedes you. Can you tell
that
us what some of the things? Yeah, can you tell us some of the things that you learned along the way, and how have those things made you so successful?
That's it's a great place to start, Tino, and I think, you know, I'm always really, it's important to me to give credit to my family and where I came from. I came from somewhat humble beginnings, and my father was a quadriplegic. He became injured at a pretty young age. I was only 5 years old, and so that was really transformative for me to see kind of what his
yeah.
challenges were in his life and how he handled that.
That's amazing.
Neither one of my parents actually graduated from college. They both went through vocational school, and they were nurses, and my mom became his caregiver. So I think it kind of gives you maybe a frame for what my childhood looked like, which was in some ways really very unique because my parents didn't work outside the home, and my mom was my dad's caregiver. So I got a lot of really great quality time with both of my parents, but I also saw their struggles. I saw what my dad dealt with being, you know, physically challenged. And my mom suffered from quite a bit of depression, which I think is something that people don't talk about a lot. And so
yeah, I can imagine.
That just really gave me, I think, some pretty deep roots and from a pretty young age, a sense of compassion and understanding for the challenges that people go through. You know, and we hear it all the time, right? You never know what someone else may be dealing with in their personal life. Sometimes you can see what their challenges are. Sometimes you can't see what their challenges are. So that really grounded me, and it's something that I think of often. And the other thing that was really important in my household was because we were dealing with a lot, was we really tried to deal with things with humor. And humor has been an important theme in my life and something that I still try to use to this day. I think that... There's a lot of value in being able to laugh through situations, and certainly the demands of the gaming industry are pretty intense at times, but I know if my team and I are still laughing that we're still in a good place and that we can get through whatever it may be that we're dealing with at that particular point in time. So those are the things that really ground me and the things that I try to always use as touchstones in my life to go back to so I don't forget where I came from.
That's fantastic. That's a very unusual. Most people haven't experienced what you experienced with your parents. It's a very unique kind of upbringing. Talk a little bit more about how that had an effect on you. How do you think that strengthened you and taught you things that maybe someone who hadn't seen something like that, would be different? How do you think that affected you?
Sure. Well, for me, it created a sense of responsibility at a very young age. And it also, you know, I don't know if it was because of my childhood or maybe just the personality that I was born with, but I had kind of a flair for the theatrical at a young age. And my parents were really wonderful in making sure that I had a lot of opportunities to have an outlet for that. Maybe they were just trying to give me an outlet for it so they didn't have to listen and sit through so many shows at home. But I did a lot of acting and drama and theater and dance when I was younger. And that was another great outlet for me. And it's something that has really helped me well in my career as well. It's funny because I look back on it and I think about the fact that my parents didn't work outside the home. And so I didn't really grow up with that experience of knowing, you know, hearing about my dad's day or hearing about my mom's day in her job. So when I became a working adult, I didn't really have that background to fall back on or any of that knowledge or insight. But the other things that I had access to, such as some of the classes that my parents would put me through, really were things that have helped me in my career. The fact that I was interested in the theater gave me a sense of presence, helped me to not be afraid of speaking in front of an audience.
Confident.
Definitely helped me build confidence and poise and grace under pressure, and just that ability to know how to command a presence when you walk into a room, which is, you know, something I know we're going to talk a little bit more about women in business, but I don't think that that's something that we're necessarily taught or expected to learn. And it's such an important skill as you progress through the ranks to be able to have that sense of executive presence. So, even though my upbringing was really unique, I am so appreciative to both of my parents for all of the opportunities that they sought out for me and for my younger sister. And I would not change the circumstances that contributed to, you know, the person that I am today.
Yeah, that's really amazing. You touched on something that's interesting, and that's the presence and the perception when you walk into a room. So there's a book out that two women wrote, and the name of the book escapes me now, but it talks about this whole complex that women have. And there was one phrase in it I remember. She said that, you know, when a man wakes up in the morning and looks in the mirror, he says, you know, Senator Tom Smith one day. And when a woman looks in the mirror, she looks to see how pretty she looks. So you're growing up with this kind of, and you brought this out, this presence. And it's interesting, what you're talking about is that you had this training in theater and show business to have that presence and to walk into a room. And that's something that's really important. I don't think people pay enough attention to that. Expand on that a little bit.
Sure. I'm not going to oversell my experience and say show business by any means, because it was all, it was summer stock theater and high school drama.
No, of course not. Yeah, it's not like high tech stuff. This was just the roots.
No.
And
it's something that, you know, almost anyone has access to. And I am really enthusiastic about it when I talk to other people who have children and they're looking at activities for their kids. Anytime that I hear someone say, oh my gosh, my kid's doing this play, or they're doing a dance recital or anything like that that involves being in front of people, I'm just always so excited about it, because I think that opens up a whole different world. And we all know, right, that one of the number one fear that most people have is that fear of public speaking. So if you could start a child at a pretty young age and help eliminate or minimize that fear for them, why wouldn't you, first and foremost, right? Because at some point in your life, you're going to have to speak in front of a group of people, whether it's a class or whether it's a board of directors, or whether it's a city council meeting, whatever it may be, I think that's a very important skill. And I was also really fortunate when I was growing up that some of those programs hadn't been eliminated from traditional elementary school too. So there was a teacher that I had, Mrs. Smith, who's still one of my favorite teachers to this day, and she integrated that into her teaching. I'm still really thankful for that opportunity and what I learned from it as it pertains to, you know, developing that executive presence. And don't laugh when I say this, but it was really important to me, not only as a young woman, but I'm quite tall. I'm 6 foot tall. And it helped me to feel more comfortable in my skin and to find ways to present myself. My dad was always nagging me not to hunch my shoulders and not to slouch, which of course is something that a lot of tall kids do, whether they're men or women, right? You kind of get a little bit tired of standing out from the crowd at some point when you're that age. Being involved in theater and debate and speech and all of those things helped me learn how to use that as an instrument and to find the positives. When I was taller than all of the boys in school, I didn't feel so positive about it. But now that I'm grown and I have a very tall, handsome husband, and I've learned how to kind of channel that height, you know, I'm very proud of it. And I've learned how to use it as a tool and use it to my benefit, as opposed to, you know, having it be something that I'm embarrassed of or I'm trying to downplay all the time. So I think you have to learn how to use the body that you have, verbally and non-verbally. I think you have to learn how to convey a certain tone when you are in the workplace. And I think theater is a great way to learn those skills. And I think it's something that definitely benefits in your adult life, in your professional life, if that's something that you've had a foundation in. It doesn't have to be theater. Maybe it's debate. Maybe it's speech. Maybe it's something similar, but still gives you a lot of those same components.
Of course. Amazing stuff. Hey, how did you start in gaming? What was, you know, and what was your progression? I mean, where did you get in?
I always have to laugh when I say this, but do you remember when people used to put ads in the paper for jobs?
As a matter of fact, I do.
I actually answered an ad in the paper in the San Diego Union Tribune. There was a position. I was on the hunt. I think I was 22, 23 years old, and I was looking for a job. And now that you know that I was interested in the entertainment industry, it was something that I thought at the time I was trying to pursue some acting and some modeling, and I thought, well, maybe I can find a job that will afford me enough money to be able to move out of my parents' house, which was something that I was wanting to do, that it would still be flexible enough that I could continue going to school. But if it had some component of entertainment in it, that would sure be appealing to me. And so I answered this ad in the paper, and Barona Casino in San Diego was looking for a promotional hostess. And they needed someone who could talk on microphone and facilitate the promotions and the drawings. And so I thought, that sounds like fun. I can talk on a microphone all day long, right? So I answered the ad in the paper, and I drove, you know, up that winding road to Barona Casino in San Diego.
Hired
me.
I know it well.
And so that was my intro into the gaming business, and that was back in 1998. So tribal gaming in California was really on the cusp, right, of booming.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it at the time. I certainly never had aspirations of working in a casino. I don't think you grow up in San Diego and think I'm going to work in a casino someday. But once I got my foot in the door, I loved the business. I loved how much it was growing. I loved how much opportunity there was. It was really a situation where I felt like I was in the right place at the right time. And things just really took off for me from there.
That's amazing. Yeah, a lot of people fall into the business. I don't know how many guests we've had that, you know, we're just fell into the business. You know, it's amazing, and it's infectious. It really is.
It is. I come across a couple of people here and there who are, you know, second generation. You know, they come into the business because mom or dad was in the business. And of course, especially if they grow up in Las Vegas or Atlantic City. But I think the rest of us, we find it by accident, happy accident.
Yeah. And it's good. And it, like, it gets in your blood, and you can't, you can't get it out. Let's talk a little bit about the evolution of gaming, and also a little bit about the woman's role in our business and how was it when you started, and where are we at now?
Well, you know, I feel really fortunate because for me, we talk about the glass ceiling, right? And I think there was some of that I felt like, you know, maybe I will hit a point where I can't grow beyond that. But I had such a unique intro into the gaming business because when I started working at Verona Casino, we had a female GM. Her name was Carol Shane.
Wow.
She had been with the tribe for a long time. And so, you know, it really was. And I, you know, as I look back, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Carol and what she meant to my career.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
I don't know that I would be where I am today, that I would have set this goal if it weren't for the fact that there was already a woman sitting in that seat. So that in and of itself, it's possible, right? So I think that was a really important piece.
Especially 20 years ago.
Especially 20 years ago, exactly. And, you know, so I wanted to joke with you when I saw that the topic of this series of shows is the Wonder Women of Gaming, because sometimes I think we want to say, I wonder where the women in gaming are, right? And it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. But I'm so reassured to see what a dynamic list of panelists you've had and you're going to feature on the show, because that shows me we are progressing in the direction that we need to progress.
Yes.
And for me, at the end of the day, I don't want to be the best woman for the job. I want to be the best person for the job. That's
Correct.
What's important to me. And when we
Correct.
Really start looking at it from that lens, then I will know mm-hmm. that we've accomplished what we need to accomplish. Now, what I will say is, you know, despite the fact that there was a woman who sat in that seat, Carol Shane, who was the longtime general manager of Verona, my vice president of marketing, Linda Devine, was a woman. So there were some really great role models for me. But I still understood at some level, or I believed, and I felt, whether I put this on myself or whether this was something that I was conditioned to believe, I felt like it was going to be harder for me to accomplish those goals than it might be for a man who was following the same path. And that's where I think we still have some work to do.
I agree with you.
I also felt at times in my career that I might have to downplay my femininity, that I might have to, you know, be more masculine in my approach to things. But I also learned the approach that worked for men didn't work for me. I had to have a different tone. I was listening to, I think it was a podcast recently, and they were talking about, you know, the differences of what we expect from men and women in leadership positions and positions of power. And the comment that was made about women in power was that they have to be competent and they have to be in command, but they also have to be warm. Because if they're not warm, then they're controlling, then they're manipulative, then they're, right? There's a different vocabulary that we assign.
It's the perception when a woman acts a certain way, correct?
Yeah, as opposed to, you know, a man who acts that way, who maybe doesn't have that sense of warmth or friendliness or whatever that, you know, word is.
And that's okay. And that's okay because he's a man,
right? He's, you know, large and in charge, and he's the boss, and he's
right,
a visionary.
The alpha, right.
So we use a different vernacular
right.
to describe men
that's
and women
great.
In leadership positions. And whether that's
yep.
in our industry or whether that's outside of our industry, you know, the other thing that I think is really topical and I'm really passionate about is that there's a movement going on right now, right, and a focus on sexual harassment. And not just in our industry, although it's touched our industry very notably, but across
mm-hmm.
the board, this Me Too movement is necessary, so necessary. But I
of
also
course.
Think it may be having some unintended consequences. And that's
yes,
something that I hope
definitely.
We as a society will self-correct with time, because right now there is a heightened sensitivity on both sides, right? Because at some level it feels like it's a little bit harder for men and women to deal on equal footing right now, because there's so much focus on sexual
correct.
Harassment in the workplace. And again,
yes.
It's so important and so necessary, but sometimes it overshadows some of the more nuanced issues that separate us, such as unconscious gender bias, stereotypes like we were just talking about, what we expect from a woman in leadership versus what we expect from you know, men in a leadership position. But at the end of the day, I really think that we as women in this industry, in any industry, have to continue to see ourselves in the driver's seat. We have to continue to be the change. We can't wait for the
yep.
change to happen. We have to identify
correct.
And rise above any self-limiting behaviors. We have to continue to be pro-female. We have to support ourselves and the women around us. But we also have to be pro-male. We can't, you know, it. Going back to what I said before, when I'm hiring for a position, I want the best person for the job. I'm not trying to find a woman for a marketing role, because that's usually where women are seen, or a man for an engineering role, because that's usually where you have men. I want the best person for that job at the end of the day, and I don't want to feed into any type of unconscious gender bias myself. I think we
correct.
As women, we have to continue to see ourselves as students, but we also have to see ourselves as mentors and leaders. And we have to be willing to lean in, a la Sheryl Sandberg. We cannot accept harassment or discrimination. But in doing that, we have to find our voice, a voice that can lead change, a voice that can be heard, not a voice that continues to divide the sexes. Because that, to me, is the biggest danger. We have to find ways. I thought that we had, but obviously there are still an undercurrent that exists, and hopefully once we work through this current movement that we're working through right now so diligently, we will continue to improve the situation for both sexes to feel comfortable in the workplace working with each other, because it shouldn't have to be so tenuous.
Yeah, and you know, everything you're saying is right on, and the whole idea of the approach, like you were saying, you know, what is my demeanor? I can't emulate a man's demeanor because he's a man and I'm a woman,
yeah.
and so I have to approach it a little differently. And that's so important, you know, because I've heard women say, you know, we have to be more like men, right, to be able to move forward, but.
That's important just as a leader in general, right? You have to be authentic. If you're
yeah.
not your true self, that it will
mm-hmm.
be seen. You can't
yeah.
sustain that for a long period of time. And that was the thing for me, you know, there have been some milestones in my life, and my husband and I have talked a lot about this, but turning 40 for me was really liberating in a lot of ways. And it was around that time that I woke up and realized, look, there's some things that I can't change about myself. I am 6 foot tall. I do not blend in. I am a woman. And if someone doesn't want me for a position because I'm a woman, then that's not a place that I want to be in the first place anyways. So I'm going to be who I am, and I'm going to trust that being my authentic self is going to lead me to the situations in which I can continue to be myself. And that's really, I mean, that's what it's all about at the end of the day, right?
Exactly, yeah. You have to be who you are, and you have to stay true to that. Let's talk a little bit about where we are right now in the gaming business. You know, where are we? What is going on around us, and how do you see things unfolding? Do you see some red flags? Do you think it's, you know, smooth sailing from here on in? What's going on exactly? Give us an overview.
You know, the world is changing so quickly these days, right? And we stop to reflect on that maybe not as often as we need to, but as technology has changed and has rapidly evolved, everything else evolves with it. We talk a lot about the M word, right? The millennials,
which
we spend more time on them than they necessarily deserve at this stage in their lives. And maybe that's part of the reason why they have some of the characteristics that they have, that inherent entitlement. Yeah. But I think what we lose sight of sometimes is the millennialization of other generations and how they interact. And one of the keys is I think we have a much shorter attention span than we have had at any other point in our history. That's right? That's one of the things that
That's like right on the money.
That's one of the things
I mean, we're talking a second.
Oh, God. Like the attention span of a gnat, you know? I mean, we joke about it in meetings all the time because it's so hard to keep everyone focused.
Like when when computer freezes up. I mean, you're like, man,
it's
I just lost 10 seconds.
It's the end of the world.
You're like freaking
out.
Yeah, exactly.
So time,
that's amazing.
Another good theme to talk about too, but that millennialization and that desire for rapid change, that sense of you know, fear of missing out.
Urgency.
And that sense of urgency, that expectation that things happen almost as quickly as they pop up in our Instagram feed, right? So industry is one that has always thrived on reinvention. There was a period of time in my early days in this industry. You know, I didn't grow up going to Las Vegas, so I didn't start going to Las Vegas until I was in the industry. And at that point in time, in the late 90s and the early 2000s, every trip that I made to Las Vegas, there was a new property going up, or a property changing its theme, or a property adding, you know, right? And we're seeing another wave of that happening right now. So the landscape's continuing to evolve, but what I worry about for the industry is that we get stuck in the same old patterns, and we don't realize that it's not just a new theme, it's not just a new look. We really, truly have to continue to evolve or die. What got us here is not what's going to get us to the next level, because everyone's expectation of what the next level is changing so quickly, so rapidly. So I think it's really contingent upon us to be constantly exploring and strategically testing new concepts, really carefully observing the effects. There's so many innovative new opportunities right now: esports, stadium gaming, mobile gaming, sports betting, right? Everybody, it's just like the opportunities in gaming, again, seem endless. But it comes with a really tremendous responsibility. And from my perspective, from the tribal gaming perspective, I carry a mental image every day of the Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians and my team members. I've had the really special privilege of getting to know our owners and our team members that I serve, and even in many cases, a lot of their family members. And I owe it to them. I have a responsibility to them to build their business in a way that is self-sustaining. Growth, opportunity, like we are facing right now in the industry, is exciting, right?
Expansion
is exhilarating. Like and especially in the casino industry, we're drawn to it because of how fast-paced it is. So we almost become, you know, hooked on the thrill of that reinvention, of that change, of what's next, of what's new. But really, what's sexy at the end of the day is sustained, stable success. That has not become more relevant and more personal for me than it did when I came to work for the Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians, because one of our tribal elders who actually works in the business, Moreno Potencio, had a conversation with me one day, and I think I was being impatient about expansion at this property at that point in time, and I'm impatient in general anyway, so I was probably on that note. But he said to me, you know, Carrie, what you have to remember is we look back 7 generations and we plan 7 generations ahead. So it may take us longer than you would like for certain things to happen, but by the time we get there, there is so much conversation and there is so much thought and planning that goes into it, we can all really feel good about it at the end of the day. And that is just, you know, I almost feel like that's a page in a book that I carry with me every day as a reminder, yes, our role as the, you know, people who are the custodians of the business, so to speak, is to explore, is to test, is to look for all of these new opportunities. But our responsibility, our most important responsibility at the end of the day, is to make sure that we are very careful and strategic and thoughtful in how we carry those things out. And I think the danger right now is times are good, the economy is good, things are heading the right direction, expansion is happening everywhere you look, but we could get too big too fast. And we could not be as careful as we need to be in what we're building and how long it will last. And so that's maybe a more measured approach. Maybe it's not as sexy as I think it is, but to me, if you can sustain, boy, that's success. That as opposed to something that, you know, gets built and then 2 years later it gets changed out because it wasn't as successful as you thought it was going to be, which happens, right? You got to try new things.
Yep.
That's the name of the game. But I just think we have a really tremendous responsibility to make sure that we're responsible in how we plan and what we build and what we do.
Carrie, what advice would you give to some of our listeners who want to get into the biz? You know, how should they go about that? I know you fell into it and you answered an ad, but is there, if someone actually wants to get into the business, and thinks about it, what is the avenue in? I mean, how do you get in?
One of my most favorite things to do is to give unsolicited advice. So I'm just full of it. I always tell our members when they start, and I have a soft spot in my heart for the Players Club. I think that starting with the Players Club is an excellent foundation for a casino career. And not just because that was, you know, kind of where I started. I don't want to say out loud that I started before player tracking was really even established in California. So we didn't really have
You were the player tracking.
We were the player tracking.
You were the player tracking. That's right.
That's exactly right. but starting with that foundation of the loyalty program and understanding that is the engine that drives our business. You know, gaming has come such a long way, and I think is really underestimated by other industries in terms of the amount of data that we have access to and can use by which to better understand our customers. So, Players Club is a great place to learn that.
We have a lot of it.
If you're looking for a foot in the door, and if you were really a genius and much smarter than I am, you would couple that by getting your degree in something that is going to support a career in database and you know, becoming a data scientist, because that's the direction that I think all of our properties are trying to move in. And
absolutely,
I don't think we will move as quickly as we want to in terms of all of those points of data we can capture about our guests and how they interact with us and how to use that data. We're very sophisticated in how to use player data, right? Gaming data. We've been doing that for a very long time. But now we've got to lay in, you know, when they come, do they go to a slot machine first or do they go get a drink at the bar? Or do they check into the hotel first? Or, you know, what's their habits of play and not just the time that they're spending on the casino floor, but how they're breaking that up with other activities. How can we better understand that to add to the guest experience? Because that's where we differentiate ourselves. At the end of the day, we're all just boxes with slots. boxes with flossy tables. Right? But the experience, and this is where I give a lot of credit to our COO here at Agua Caliente, Sal Sherry, we are laser beam focused on that guest experience because we know that's where the opportunity lies. And what informs that? The information that you have, the data that you can get from your players is one critical component of that, but we can't ever lose sight of the human element of it as well. So to me, someone who is, you know, pursuing an pursuing their education and you know, following a path towards, you know, becoming a database wizard and learning it from the ground up and how our guests interact with loyalty programs such as the Players Club, you know, I think that that's a really great place to start. And from there, I would say one of the beauties of this industry is that there are so many different facets. Get in early and try on as many positions for size as you can as you're working your way up. Because at some point, you'll be in one channel, right?
So you want to try the flavors.
Yeah, try it on for size and see what fits you best, whether that's food and beverage, whether that's gaming, whether that's regulatory,
hotel,
whether that's,
whatever,
you know, entertainment, advertising, hotel. There's so very rare that you can work for a company and try so many different careers on for size before you commit.
I know. It's amazing.
Before you commit. And now that gaming is booming and expanding again, I think it's a great time, especially for a lot of those, you know, kids who are getting out of school and maybe having a hard time finding a profession that fits them. This is a place where you can try a lot of things on for size and figure out what's going to be the right path for you long term.
That's great. Fantastic stuff. Let's should we take a couple of calls?
Yeah, let's take some calls.
Okay, let's do that. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Kerry Smith. How are you tonight? Hello. There's a bit of a delay, so this is GT Radio. I have Kerry Smith. Hello, hello. Okay, nobody there. Let's try.
Uh-oh, we scared him off.
We scared him off. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Kerry Smith. Hello, hello. Are you there? Okay, nobody there. That's weird. It doesn't usually happen like that. Let me try it over here.
No one wants to talk to us.
Maybe we have a technical glitch. There is a delay. Hello, this is GT Radio. Are you there? Hello, hello. That's weird. Never happened before. Huh. All right. Well, we might have to talk some more if we have and that's not going to be an issue. You're great. The stuff you've been talking about has been amazing. Okay. We'll try one more time here and cross our fingers. All right. Here we go. Hello. This is GT Radio. I have Kerry Smith. Can you hear me? Hello.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Ah, here we go. Yes, I can.
All
there was a delay.
All right.
I don't know if that was with the other people, too, but we waited longer and nobody came on. I have Kerry Smith.
Oh, okay.
Did you have a question for her?
Yeah, Kerry, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but I just wanted to know if you can expand where you seems like you came up through the marketing side, you know, as your career. Now, I mean, what would you say to someone, you know, those aspiring GMs out there? You know, is marketing, do you think, is the best way to grow and get to that kind of executive position? Or do you see, you know, like other paths that you could advise on?
That's a great question. Thank you, Brock. And who's the caller, if I can ask?
My name's Scott.
Thanks, Scott. So yes, I came up through the marketing path, and I've mentioned my experience at Barona. So my first 13 years in gaming were spent at Barona Casino in San Diego, now Barona Valley Ranch, and I was part of the team that took them through that opening, which was a really exciting phase in California tribal gaming and for that property in particular. Barona is a really unique property and has a great reputation in the industry. And I am thankful to consider myself an alum of that particular property. One of the benefits that I gained from working for them was that they really believed in finding the right person for the job and then training them what they needed them to do for that particular position. It was necessary at the time because gaming was expanding so rapidly, and there was a shortage of qualified individuals to open all of these new properties. So one of the benefits was, in addition to working my way through almost every single marketing function at the property, I rose to a point where I was a special events manager, and I put together a $1 million blackjack tournament, a winner-takes-all $1 million blackjack tournament for our property when we opened. And that kind of put me in a spotlight. And because of that, I was recruited by the general manager that I've already mentioned and our AGM at the time, Lee Skelly, and they put me through a casino boot camp to become a casino manager. So that gave some really unique perspective to my marketing experience. And I have to say, I don't think that I would be where I am as quickly as I have gotten there. 20 years in the business, I don't know, maybe it doesn't feel quick, but I feel like I was able to rise through the ranks a little bit faster because I had that experience on both sides, marketing and gaming. So I was a casino manager for 3 years. I was the highest authority on the shift, and I was the new kid on the block. So I rotated through all of the different shifts, which gave me even more insight. And then I eventually moved back into a marketing path. But I was such a smarter marketer because of having that experience and understanding more of the guest casino experience, understanding more of the team member experience. So that's a little bit more of the background of kind of how I came up through the ranks. I do think it's really unique that we're seeing more and more GMs coming from a marketing background. Lee Torres at Pechanga is a great example. Cato Moy, my counterpart at Agua Caliente, also came up through the marketing channel.
Right.
And I think it's a little bit of sweet reward, if you will, because marketing always gets blamed when the casino isn't performing well, right? What's the first thing you say? Oh, well, marketing didn't do their job, and you know we didn't have enough people come to the doors, and what are we going to work on headcount?
Yeah.
And then a marketer gets promoted, and it's like, well, who can the marketer complain when the marketer's sitting in the GM seat? So it's a really good perspective, but I think because marketing is one of those areas that touches every facet of the organization, it does lend itself to moving up through those ranks and having a better understanding of how the departments function. I don't know if I would tell someone any specific channel to follow to get to GM faster or better. I would just say the more experience you have and the more well-rounded you can become, and really that means the more often you put up your hand and you say, hey, I'll take on that project, I'll figure that out, the more that you do that, the more experience you gain and the better candidate you're going to be.
Yeah,
I hope that answers the question.
Yes. It seems like the people willing to put that extra, oomph into their job, they make the difference.
Yeah, you absolutely can't sit back and wait for it to happen for you. I think you really have to be willing to put yourself out there and to take on additional responsibility and to, you know, make sure that eyes are on you when it counts, when that old saying of you're always interviewing for your next job, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's a great question. Great question.
Thank you for the question,
Scott. Thanks a lot,
Scott.
Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Bye, Carrie.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, great question. All right. Let's see who else we got here. Hopefully this next person will hear us.
All right. Or we'll hear them.
Or we'll hear them, yeah. Exactly. Okay, let me just see here what we got. Okay. Let me see. Oh, here's Trent. All right. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Carrie Smith on the line. Hello.
Hi, Tina. This is Heidi Antezana speaking. Can you hear me?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, and I'm so happy to hear Carrie. I just love her. She's just a breath of fresh air in this industry. Thank you, Carrie, for all your insights.
Oh, thank you, Heidi. I appreciate that. I feel the same way about you.
So the one I have, it's two questions. The first one is, what do you think it takes today, in today's tribal gaming landscape, to succeed that is different to being in a corporate environment or coming from a corporate environment? That is the one question. And the second one is, who are your women leaders? Who are the women leader mentors that you have? And I know you mentioned two previously, but more in the maybe tribal Indian gaming landscape as well. I'd love you to share those with us.
Great questions, Heidi. Absolutely. The first question, how tribal gaming landscape differs from corporate gaming, I'm going to have to maybe beg a little bit of naivety there, because my background is entirely tribal gaming landscape, but I can give you what my perception is, and I can certainly talk a little bit about what I think are some keys to being successful in tribal gaming. I have had the benefit of working for some really fabulous tribes in the state of California. I've mentioned Barona already. I've mentioned Agua Caliente. I was also really privileged to work for the United Auburn Indian Community in Sacramento, Thunder Valley Casino Resort. And I also worked for the Morongo tribe at their Morongo Casino just down the street from where I work today. And they're all very unique. And so I think that someone who does well in tribal gaming is someone who is not too rigid in their philosophies and their thought processes. I think someone who is able to be flexible and adapt to their situation. I joke a lot when I am interviewing candidates that the last thing I want to hear from someone is someone who brings in their briefcase and opens it up and says, here's my bag of tricks. Here's the things that I've done at every other casino that I've worked at, because that's great. We should all have a bag of tricks, right? But you also have to understand not all things work equally well in all markets, in all properties. So I think flexibility is really key. I think that it's really important to lead with humility. This is not my business at the end of the day. I get to sit in the seat out of the goodwill of the tribe who empowers me to look after their business, look after their employees, and look after their future. And that's where, you know, I'm not kidding when I say that I take that with a lot of responsibility, and I take it with a lot of humility. My husband is my greatest fan and my sounding board for all things. And I always hear him in my head, because he always says that I'm, you know, so much harder on myself than I need to be. But I also think that that is what makes me successful, is because that I am self-aware, and I'm constantly self-critiquing and looking for opportunities to grow. And it keeps me humble. And I think that that's important. I think it's that I should always know what my role in this organization is. And yes, it's one of a leader, and I have to wear that mantle and that executive presence, but I also have to know at the end of the day, it's not my business. I am here on someone else's grace, and I owe that to them. So I think that those are some components that are important in tribal gaming. I think they could also be important in corporate gaming as well.
Great. No, I love those. I love those.
Okay, good. And then with regards to women leaders, you know, I like to joke, you know, I've got a crush on her. I think she's awesome. She's one of my new heroes. Heidi is one of my new heroes, because Heidi's written a book, and that's one of my goals to do that someday. So first of all, shout out to you, because I love the business that you've built, and I love the way that you've built it, and really looking forward to opportunities to work together. Heidi and I just got to know each other here recently.
She's great.
I have a lot of women that I work with that I have a big crush on because I just think that they're awesome people, and I love the energy that they bring into the workplace every day. Robin Stone, our vice president of HR, is one of my women crushes. Stacey Duke, my director of food and beverage. Becky Graves, my director of engineering. That's right, you heard me, director of engineering.
Wow, cool.
And if I can say this on air, she's pretty badass too. So I've got a lot of really good women just in my personal life that I get to interact with every day. Don Clayton, who is the GM of Thunder Valley, is a dear friend of mine. And we worked.
She's really cool.
I was there. And she is, you know, a spitfire. And I, there are times that I think to myself, what would Don Clayton do in this situation? And I'm sure she would, you know, take no names. So those are just a handful of the women that I really love and look up to. But I love meeting any woman in a leadership role, whether it's in my local community, a lot of the hoteliers and GMs, I'm seeing more and more women. And whenever I come across a woman leader in our industry, it's almost like I have to meet her, I have to know her. And I think that's one of the things that's happening with the movement that we were talking about earlier, is we're all recognizing and realizing we have to be each other's biggest champions and biggest fans.
Yeah, that's great. Great stuff. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Just to add that when I have met Carrie, she commands the presence of a room when she walks in. She might want to tell you a little bit about it. Absolutely. She does have some pageant experience, which does give her an upper hand.
You're kidding me.
Absolutely awesome when she walks in. And she's not only beautiful, but she's smart. And that is one thing that you can have both. You know, you can be feminine and you can be smart, and she has all of those things. So thank you, Carrie, and thanks, Tina.
Oh,
thank you,
lady.
Thank you for calling in. You're amazing.
I'm not going to be able to fit out my office door tonight. My head's too big.
You have a nice night, Haiti. Thanks.
Yes, you too, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
She's great. All right. Well, we got a lot of people waiting to talk to you, so let's see if we can get some more of these. Yeah, this is great stuff. Okay, hang on. Let's see if we can actually – let's see. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Carrie Smith. Hello, GT Radio. I have Carrie Smith. Okay, nobody there. Some people might just be listening. Some people can call in and they're listening. So.
Yeah, that would make
sense. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Carrie Smith. Are you there?
Hi, Carrie. It's Jeff. How are you?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Great. Here's my question. Is there one particular project or event that you've worked on that you're particularly proud of, and why?
Oh, thank you so much for asking this question. I have one event. First of all, I'm an event girl. I came up through special events. I spent a lot of time there. I love promotions and events. That's one of my favorite things. And no matter what hat I wear, I'm always going to be the person who wants to go help set up the event. I am really proud of an event that my team put together here at the Spa Resort Casino in downtown Palm Springs. And it was a conversation that I was having with a couple of people, and we were talking about the fact that nothing really happens in our area on New Year's Eve. And you have the ball drop that happens in Times Square, and, you know, that's obviously the most notable event that happens. There's other live broadcasts that happen from other cities. Vegas is known for having a really spectacular New Year's Eve celebration.
Yeah.
But here in the greater Palm Springs area, it's kind of a quiet night. And there weren't even a lot of the hotels at that point in time that were doing events. And so we took on the really audacious goal of saying, well, we're going to create the West Coast version of the New York Times Square ball drop. And we are now in our fourth year of planning the event, and it has grown tremendously year by year. This past year, we had over 15,000 people attend the event, which happens on our front doorstep. I've got to tell you, my casino's on the smaller side. I couldn't fit 15,000 people inside the doors, but we have 15,000 people in the parking lot outside of our building.
That's amazing.
An amazing fireworks show at New Year's Eve, or at the midnight countdown, that goes off of the roof of the building that rivals anything you're going to see anywhere else. And because we knew we needed to have that really signature piece, because we wanted to be the West Coast of the West Coast version of the New York Times. I can't even get it out. I'm so excited talking about it. We wanted our own version of
it. It's incredible.
We commissioned a local artist to create a 40-foot tall palm tree, and as we count down to the new year, we have a media ring that actually rises up the palm tree, and at the stroke of midnight, it flashes and counts down and triggers all of the fireworks going off of the top of the building.
Oh, it's my God, that's amazing.
My team works so hard to put it together every year, and every New Year's Eve is just like the best night of the year, because I go home and I'm just so incredibly proud of what they have created and what we're able to give back to the greater Palm Springs area. So that's my favorite. There's a lot of
amazing
events over the years. That's my absolute favorite.
That's amazing. That's incredible. What a thing. I mean, I know where I'm going to be spending next New Year's.
Please
Nothing
do.
Like that on the Yeah, 15,000 people.
We're in the process of deciding on our entertainment for next year, and our next goal is to get a live look-in on the national broadcast. We partner with our local NBC affiliate, who does a live broadcast from the event and simulcast of the fireworks.
Wow.
So our next goal is to get a live look-in on one of the national broadcasts to really give attention to the fact that we've got this fantastic event, and I have full confidence at some point in time it is going to be just as popular, just as well known as the New York celebration.
Wow, that's incredible. Unbelievable.
Thanks for the question,
just
Jeff.
Incredible.
Thank you.
So this is something that was basically just sitting there as an opportunity, and you guys just blew it up. It's an amazing thing. I've never heard of anything like that before.
You know, it was one of those conversations, you know, when you're sitting around and it's like the proverbial back of the napkin drawing, you know, you just start talking about something. And, you know, I think it took us a while to talk ourselves into it. And a good friend who doesn't work here anymore, but was really critical in the development of the event is Michael Potts. And he now works at Bear River in Northern California. But he had to talk me into it, even after we talked about it. You know, sometimes when you have an idea, we were talking about this before the show, Tino, when you have an idea that's seemingly crazy and people go, gosh, God, that's a great idea, but I don't know if it'll work. Will it work? And we just kind of kept talking about it over and over again. And the more we talked about it, the more excited we got about it. And then we started to reach out to local partners, and the advertising team took it and ran with it. Our director of advertising, Kathy Gary, has been a huge focal point in that. Our special events manager, Christina Belcher. I mean, it's really due to a lot of people who said, yeah, it's a crazy idea, but you know what? We like crazy. And let's make it happen. You know? And that's the kind of person that I'm really, really blessed to work with here at Star Resort Casino in Agua Caliente.
That's so amazing. That's so amazing. Carrie, what are some parting thoughts? And I'm going to let you choose what you want to end off with, because I think that we've touched on a lot of things. And what are some of your – give us some of your parting thoughts.
You know, my parting thoughts, and I think that this is really relevant right now, our industry is on the brink of the next big boom. Right? Sports wagering has opened up, is opening up, I should say, because there's still a lot of questions about how exactly that's going to unfold. You know, the promise of online gaming is still out there, promise / threat of online gaming. There's so much that is is unfolding right now, and there is such a need in our industry for talented, high-potential individuals. And I think it's really critical that we, as leaders in this organization, again, if we're going to bear that responsibility of building these businesses sustainably, one of the most important areas where we can invest our time and our money is in our team, is in our human capital. And I love the question that you asked about, you know, how to get into the industry and where do you start and how do you grow? I think that this is such a unique industry. I think there's still some stigma attached to it, and I hope that that goes away with time, you know, that it came from less than moral or ethical, you know, background, or you know, it's a vice industry that we work in. And let's be honest, at the end of the day it is, but it's an entertainment industry. And what we provide for our employees and what we provide back to our communities in terms of jobs, in terms of philanthropic donations, in terms of entertainment quality is really significant and notable. But none of that happens without the people who come through these doors every day to make it happen. And my team and I, it's funny, I was just having this conversation with someone today about how important certain divisions are. They're all important. If someone didn't come in tomorrow, it would make a difference. And the rest of us would all have to figure out how to do that person's job to keep our small village functioning as it does every day. So I think we have to really continue to invest in education for our industry. I think we have to really continue to invest in training and helping to improve the professionalism of our industry, which includes how we interact as men and women inside of these doors, and how we promote men and women inside of these doors. And for me, that's the most important thing that I touch every day. It's not the slot machines. It's not the tables. It's not the steaks that we serve in the steakhouse or the cocktails that we serve at the bar. It's the people who make that happen. And I know for myself, if I stay focused on that, if I stay focused on the responsibility that I owe to them and to their families, and I continue looking for ways to improve their lives, they will be happy. They will stay here. They will continue to grow within this organization. And everything else is easy. If they're happy and they're productive and the experience that they're providing to our guests is a positive one, the rest of it's all gravy. So I think that that's what's important to me. That's something that I want to leave you with today. And I'm just really appreciative, Tino, that you are taking this time to profile all of these women in gaming so we don't have to wonder where they are. So we know that the Wonder Women are out doing the great work. Thank you for shining a light on that. And thank you for, you know, being such a great supporter of women in this industry as well. I think that you are a great example of how we should all be lifting up people in this business and shining a light on those who are doing great work. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And Carrie, you've been just fantastic. I'm going to want to have you back on the show and maybe team you up with somebody, one of your mentors, maybe Don Clayton. I don't know. I'll talk to her, but we'll definitely have you back on. And thank you so much for taking the time and all your great words of wisdom.
I'd love to come back anytime, Tino. Thanks for having me. And thank you to all the callers and listeners. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful evening.
Same to you. Take care.
Thanks.
Well, that was pretty amazing. She's just an amazing woman and an amazing role model for so many people. Carrie's just great. So we have another great show coming up June 21st, Kim Van Enberg, who's the CEO of the Casino del Sol. And, you know, all these women have great stories. So tune in and remember that there's always someone who's got a story to tell. You just need time to listen. You have a great day and God bless.